Okay, so I did the first one in German. I don't know how it was. We did publish this one that it will be in English, so I will do it in English, so it's fair for everybody that say, oh, it's only English, so it's written like this. Anyway, it will not change anything, because how I speak English or German, they're both bad, so it really doesn't matter. So I think important thing is look at the code and understand the concept, and not much too much. So, of course, one of the challenges when you build Windows 8 store apps is that you need to keep in mind that you have touch, you have keyboard, you have mouse. And we try to do the best as we can to make it that very, very easy. And we try to embed as much logic as possible directly in the control itself. I think it's important to say because, for example, in Windows Phone 7, I was a bit disappointed that some control really lacks some of the basic gesture. You need to go with the gesture recognition, go do all your logic. We have a gesture recognition class, but it should not be easy. It should be fairly easy for the developer to develop an app that really matches the two, because I think that's really the key opportunity here, that you write one app that spans between tablet and your desktop apps. I think that's one, probably the key differentiator between the Microsoft platform and the other platform. So for touch, for example, we have in every control, we try to make the best. You've seen that, for example, the grid view has inertia when I scroll. You've seen in the keynote, the flip view, I could flip it. Would be cool, for example, to have kind of zooming scenario, right? So I start from the same apps that we left over during the keynote. And quickly go back. Hopefully, I have it. So if we start apps back, you remember that I could scroll, do selection. I can go in, do sharing, do search, can go back. So it would be cool, for example, here, that I could zoom. Wait a moment. Oops, that I could crash the apps. I know, I have a small mistake. I can go in. It would be cool that I could zoom on this image, right? Would it be that very hard? No, actually, most of the control have already a lot of logic in there. So let's do that first. I quickly disable something because I know it will get me. Okay, cool. So now, in my photo viewer application, you remember I have only a free view in my XAML tree. Now, what I could do, I could say, look, it would be cool inside the data template that I allow to zoom in that specific image. So one of the controls that offers zoom is this scroll viewer that normally lets you scroll. And I can go and say, oh, look, I want a scroll viewer around my image. And now, automatically, by default, is enabled. I can disable. I can disable inertia if I want. I can control the zoom, but by default, it has already zoomed. So as you can see, it's already zooming. The problem is that now it's already fully zoomed. So the first thing I can do, I could do it with a bit of data binding logic to say, look, by the default view should be the width. And here I could do a data binding and say, I give you a default width that is the same as the size of my windows. Now to save time, I give it a fixed 8 and width with a bit of border, so 762. Now if I go back and try to zoom in, you will see that it fits the screen, the image, and now I can go, oops, and zoom. The problem is as soon as zoom, it goes top left. I don't know why this is the default. You can quickly change that with saying that the scroll viewer, the horizontal scroll bar visibility should be automatically, so it should show it only when I really want to scroll, and the vertical scroll bar visibility, it should be also auto. Sorry. Now let's start again. And my son likes to play ice hockey in Ambrì-Piotta, unfortunately, so it will be a short career. And of course, as every hockey player, he has left the teeth for the picture. I didn't break it on purpose. I just lost it, and I think it would have been cool as a picture. But you see now that the zoom works fine, exactly how you would expect with pinch, and it works also with the mouse wheel, control mouse wheel. Eh? So that's pretty cool. You don't need to think too much about adding this functionality. We have touch, inertia, and all these things already in there for you, and it works for both keyboard and mouse, including touch and mouse. Cool. Next one. Voila. So, another thing that is important is the settings. And you've seen that I had a settings pane for the Pong to do an upper chase. And we really tried all at Microsoft. We tried, the first we came with the ini file, was a big failure. Then we thought about the registry settings, was another big failure. And then we say, no, everybody should do their own. But we want to give them the right possibility, so the developer, first, to have a centralized place where the user finds the settings. So he knows if I want to set the settings for these apps or for the OS or so, I always swipe or with the mouse and go to the settings tab. So everybody will find the setting of your app. What you do in there, it's really up to you. So this is standard from the OS. You click settings. This is also standard from US. You can have some hyperlink in there. And the hyperlink then is up to you. And normally, you can show part of your application UI where it shows the settings for you. And there is a normal XAML page, and you can put whatever you want in there. Now, with this ship it soon, we forgot to add this control already in the SDK. So normally, you have to build your own. But there is an open source from the team itself. So the XAML team in Microsoft, Tim Meyer, has published a couple of controls that help fulfill this need of controls. And one is this Callisto that has also this settings pane. So let's add it. I want to add some settings in my application. It's not too much complex. So first I need a specific control. So I add a reference. And you see, once you install the Callisto SDK, it's a free SDK, you add the reference here, ready to rock. Now, I want this settings UI to show, so I can create a settings user control. So I can go in here and say, I want a new item, and exactly as you did years and years in WinForm and whatever, we have user controls here too. So user controls, and let's call it settings. Voila. Now, on the settings page, I want to keep it very, very simple. I want to simply add a checkbox. So I should have a checkbox somewhere. Checkbox, voila. You can drag and drop here. You can drag and drop on the surface. We can give it a content here. So content, show metadata. So I want a flag that say if I should show or not metadata of the pictures itself. Make it a bit bigger so you understand. You see it? We give it a name, X name. It should be what we do with great exif checkbox. Voila. And we should see where it is. It's there. We could say, let's do that. Let's say reset all layout, and it should be good. It's strange, it's like this. But let's see how it looks like. Now we are ready. Now the next thing I need to do is to wire up that when I go from here to the settings and click here, it goes to that specific page. So how you do that? You go in the global XAML, app XAML, and exactly as we wired up the search before, we can wire up the settings. So I can say settings, pane, whoopala, why did I click wrong? Voila, settings pane, resolve, yes, I want to use the settings, and then you say get for current view, and here is common request. So if somebody clicks on the settings, it goes in this event handler. Say, do you have comments for me? And normally you would do that. Here, add all the hyperlink comments that you want to show. In this case, I want only to show one, that it will be this one. I say, look, I want to create a new settings comment. That is the show settings, and add it to the arguments. So here I will wrap my hyperlink. Now I need to tell what it should do in the show settings. So show settings is not too much code, but I need to show it. Voila. I say a new settings command that should show show info. When it's click, you should create a new setting layout, and this setting layout is this control from Callisto. What it should be the width, I say an arrow view, you can decide how much is there. And then you say the header text. The content is a new instance of my user control, the one with the checkbox that I did before, right? And then here I mistyped the things, it should be settings. Did I cut something? What did I copy? Yeah, settings. Voila. Not even copy and paste I can do anymore. It's bad, getting old. Okay, so now I have my windows. It should show the settings windows. And I said, okay, show it. Now if I go in, and if I didn't do any mistakes, I don't know, I'm here, I go settings, I see my upper link, show info, and my upper link has the main checkbox with the metadata. Notice that I didn't even put save in there, because the default behavior on Windows 8, as soon as you close, it saves the status. So that's what people expect. It's a bit different, but most of the settings, if I change it now it should be changed. It does nothing because I didn't implement the logic. But I have all the settings wired up, right? You show the settings, the setting windows, I have my checkbox done. Cool. So now the biggest question comes, what I do with these settings? Where do I store? So we don't force you to store it somewhere and so on. But as OS, I think it's cool to offer some capability. One possibility, we have a local settings property bag that is stored in the local storage of your app. It means you disinstall the apps, your settings are gone. Hallelujah, no big registry key, no big RD space used for settings. It stayed there, it's persisted, so that's one way. The other way, even more smarter, we have something called roaming settings. The idea of roaming settings is fairly easy. It's another property bag that what allows you to do, it allows you to synchronize settings across all the application, the same application, install on multiple devices with the same user ID. It means if I have my ARM tablet for the couch and my Intel base for development and notebook replacement, I have the same apps, I have the same settings. As soon as I install the same apps here, I get exactly the same settings. That's pretty cool. I don't want to go in and say, I want the teletext, the Swiss-Italian teletext on RSI La Uno. I don't need to do that. You will already get it. The language, all these settings I can store. So if you don't have something too critical from security or privacy issue, because it stores all on a Microsoft server, use the roaming setting. And by default, if you use the roaming setting and the guy is not even connected, he stores it already on the local settings. So you don't need to worry or think about these things. Let's add my settings to the application. Good. We go back here and we say, I know that by default I should save and load if I show the settings. So I go on my settings page here and wire up two events. This load it and this unload it. So this is how I know that the user has shown and closed the settings pane. Okay, what I should do? Let's start with the unloaded. So here I can really go to the storage, and here I simply resolve. So you see there is a storage, then there is application data, and here there is current, and here the real difference are local settings, is the local property back, or roaming settings. Actually, the cool things, if you want, we have even a local folder, that is an isolated storage only for you. As soon as you disinstall the application, it loses the data. So it's really a local cache. But we also have the roaming settings. So a roaming folder, how cool is that? So if I have one node, I could even synchronize the content, the file that I'm storing locally between. I write half of the email, I switch to my email on my desktop, I can have the same settings or even the same file You have a quota, so you cannot send the pirated new James Bond film across this way. But for small file, even for 20 megabyte file, it works perfectly fine. So, cool. Let's add the logic here. There's a bit of logic to write. So, the first thing I want to do is when I unload, I save in the property bag of roaming, right? Call it exif. The value of the exif checkbox, right? Is it check? No. True, false. When I load it, I need to do one more check. Say, is the first time that you call me? Probably the parameter doesn't even exist. So I say, look, do you have the roaming setting exif? If yes, load it and pass it to the checkbox. That's about it. So now, let's try if it works. Go in, I go to the settings, I say show info, store the metadata, unload the page, go in, close the application, restart the application, go in, track the settings, show info, the checkbox is there. Pretty cool and so on. Let's do something with these settings. So, I really want to show some metadata in the picture. So, for showing metadata in the picture, I had the idea to say, oh, it would be cool to add something on the image itself, on the data template, maybe outside the scroll viewer so I don't zoom on the label. So let's add quickly a grid. And I think if you do XAML, you are at home here. If you're never done, you really need to understand the hierarchy. It's really hierarchical, so you need to understand what you do, what you place. It's just the only tricky part there. And now what I say, look, I want a border, and I show you later what it does, the border, and I have a stack panel, so it organizes vertically, horizontally, and here I bind to some property of my collection, the name of the picture, but I can even go to the exif information, say, show me the camera model that I took this picture with. Now, the only thing I want to show, this one, yes or no, depending on the settings. So how I do that on a data template, because it's changing for every image, you use a converter. And here you see I have a converter. I say bind the visibility of the border with a converter. So how I do converters? Converters is very easy. It's a way to convert a value in something else. And here I already have the one that I use on the keynote for converting the stream of the thumbnail. And if you do data binding, you do XAML converter, you need to learn it. They're the basic of almost everything. And now we say, we call it visibility converter. It needs to implement a value converter. In this case, the logic, I do it from my own. I can have a back converter if I do enter things, I want to convert things. In this case, it's read-only, I don't need. So what I implement in my converter is very easy. I say, look at my settings, right? The one I store. If I have the settings, and the settings are true or false, populate. If not, by default, it's false. And I simply return the value to the converter, visible or collapse. So now, if I take this one, I go back here on my page. You can see that in my data binding, I really see, look, the visibility value, it should come from the converter. So it will come back, visible or collapsed. Very easy. Now, I need to go and define my converter. I can define it here on the page, or I can even define it globally if I want to use it multiple times. So let's do it globally. I already have one defined. Simply copy. I say, look, it should be the visibility converter and should be the visibility converter name. Okay? So now, everywhere in my pages that I want to convert the visibility true or false of the exif data, it comes from there. So now, if I didn't do too many mistakes, I can go in my image, and you see I have my information here on the bottom with the camera and the name of the image changing on the data binding. Now, if I change my settings, I remove it, back. Now we will stay for a couple of one more because it's virtualized, so we need to trigger a refresh, but now it's gone. So it's a bit more code. I need to say, oh, drop the virtualized items, but that's small tricks that you can do. So, you've seen, it's pretty cool. I can use converter to convert things. It will be the basic of every XAML developer. But one thing, I want an integrated setting with the OS, and I want to store it as much as possible on the roaming settings. Cool. I really like these roaming settings because it's one thing that make me, every time I need to reinstall a machine, reinstall the application, I need to set all these settings, such a painful thing to do. And now, with this one, I say, oh, install all the application I purchased, install all my apps, if it comes with already all my settings, if they implement roaming settings, it's just cool. Oh, oops. Okay. Another thing that is very important is to understand the tiles. So as you've seen, we went away from this star menu with a lot of text in there, not fun. And we moved to the idea to have icons. We call it tiles. It's much more modern, but in fact, they are icons. And those icons, they can show information. How do I show information to them? So first of all, you need to understand that there's basically two tiles. There's one that is square and one that is wide. 150 pixel by 150, 310 by 150. You can implement only one or both. You cannot just implement the wide. You need to implement or all or both or just the square one. Both, they can receive updates. So not because you choose to have a small tiles that you cannot receive update. Both can be updated. And also, maybe interesting, and you have seen with my Snow Report demo, you can have secondary tiles. What are secondary tiles? Are tiles that help you have a jump in. Are basically, I can even have with the Internet Explorer, I can pin a site, and it shows me a tile. So everything is a bookmark at the end. So you can have tiles that are bookmark, and those bookmark style, they can also receive notification. So let's implement a tile notification. So if I look at my screen, you can see that I have many tiles notification. I have the stock quote. The same application can really have multiple tiles. Maybe there's no report. It's really lazy today. It's not one to show me any data here. But again, you can show Ricardo showing things, the dollar course. But actually, some apps, they even show just something to make it cool. Instead of a static image, they simply change something in there, right? It makes a bit more alive. So even the picture application, I don't even know where it is. I think this one or something. The cool thing is that they change. So the photo apps you see is changing the photo through some photos. Now, how do they do that? The application is dead, right? As soon as I switch, the application is dead. How do I update tiles? It turns out that tile notification, you can send some time notification. Say, look, in an hour or at that specific time, you should show these things. So what I can do, when I close my application, I can say, when I close my application, I want to show every 15 seconds a new tile. You can send 4,000 something tile update if you want. So you can plan for 4,000 updates, and the OS will do it for you. The application is dead, but you still have pseudo-live, let's call it schedule information in there. So it will be cool that when I leave my application, see, now I have this, this super ugly icon, and here is basically when you can say I want the small one, or I want the large one, or I want to turn off notification if I want. So now I want to have here, it would be cool that it show my last 5 pictures that I browse, for example, or the first 5 pictures of my collection. So that would be cool. Let's do that. We go in? In the app.xaml.c#, there is a new event that is called unsuspending. So remember that maybe the user switched to another application with Task Manager, Alt Tab, Windows key, and your application suddenly is suspended. And even worse, maybe it's killed. So you should save the state. And that's the place where you can save the state. But you can use it for other stuff too. So you get the deferral, say, look, kill me, it's okay, but give me some time between here and here. I tell you when I'm complete to do my cleanup. If you take like 2 hours to do your cleanup, you get killed anyway. So it's not a good idea to do an infinite loop in here, but you can do some logic here, right? So the logic here has a bit more code. I could have done a bit better, but okay. So let's look what I do. I get the deferral, say wait. I get the vector, so I want to have all the picture that I have in my collection. And I say, look, I want to have the first 5 pictures. Yeah, I'm a VB, yeah. I start with one as a... No, there is, I'm so lazy that then I use the eye for something else below. And so I'm so stupid, I really want to save time. Okay, async, because I do some requests, and it is very simple. I say, look, if you find an information, so I have a picture, what you should do, you should get... Yeah, that's one thing I need to explain more. So, I cannot point to a picture in the picture folder. Why? Because the user deletes the picture, then I'm screwed, right? So the tricks that I do a copy of the thumbnail from that picture in my local storage. Huh? That's what I do. So here is what I do. I say, create a new file in my local storage, isolated storage, and then create a stream on top of that. Hopala. Give me a random access file for that and copy the stream from the thumbnail of my image, right? So I copy the thumbnail in that local file. So thumbnail is small, I can have my 5 thumbnail. At this point, I'm ready to send the tile notification. How it works, tile notification, oops, I want to go here. The tile notification use some templates. So there should be templates somewhere, voila. And the templates are basically XML format. Let's do a bit smaller. And here is the catalog. So you can see I have templates that take, I don't know, a large picture with a text, something like this. Voila. Or a picture with a text. So you see I can use this one. It's called tile wide image and text. And what he has an XML. So the only thing I need to say, get this XML, change some value in the XML and send it as a notification. You cannot send arbitrary XAML or HTML to a tile. You need to use one of these templates. So it's very easy. I have an image field and a text field. So exactly what I do, I go grab the tile update manager and say, give me the template for the tile wide image and text 01, exactly the one I showed you before in the Explorer. Get the text and write in the name of the picture, get the image, and here is the syntax. It's the only thing that you need to learn. This means get it from local storage. Get it from my local cache, not the picture folder, my local cache. And now what I can do, I can say, do a schedule notification, so I can do at recurring time, and say, after 10 seconds of the eye, there we go, why I didn't start from zero. So every 10 seconds, you show another picture. At this point, I'm ready. I enable the notification queue, and I send the schedule notification. Now, I forgot to say a couple of things. And one important thing, I use a wild tile, so I need to add a wild default tile. So here in the application UI, you can see I have a white logo, and I can go and grab it somewhere. I think somewhere I should have in the old here. There we go. A logo white. So in this case, I have also a white logo, and I get the notification of the white. So now I start my application. I go in here. Now in theory, I kill it, and now it's doing this logic and say, look, for my tile, and it should be larger. Now in 10, 15 seconds, the first time it takes a bit more time when it's registered, it will show here the tile. Hopefully it will work, not like the snow report, but I don't know what's wrong in my machine right now, so. Let's hope, yeah! So you see, now in 10 seconds, it will change the image. I should have scaled the image better, should have done, maybe not put these ugly icons. But still, you know, it's much more alive, and I didn't need to create something difficult or so on. You copy the code from the example, and you change a couple of lines of code, and you have it. Pretty cool to make your tile alive without too much work. Now, we have another thing. Tiles are good, but are always in the star screen. And if somebody has it down to the right, they will never see it. And sometimes you want to notify the user, oh, something has happened, and you really need to take an action. And those are called TOS notifications. So classical TOS notification, you have a new email, or even better, somebody's calling at you with Skype. Skype is a Windows 8 store app. It cannot live on the, it's not running, but it can at least send notification, and it can do some more work, and I show you later on. So now I can use TOS notification. I can say, I can send you some information to you. Now, here, the user can disable this feature, thanks God, and developer can be as stupid as me implementing in the wrong way. So what I do, after 60 seconds that I close my application, I want to send the user, say, oh, please, reopen me. I'm such a cool application. So I think you really don't want to use it for something like this. But just to know that you can notify user about things. So you can even put a timer, say, oh, at 9 o'clock tomorrow, you should do something, a classical to-do list. This is way do you schedule an alarm with Windows 8. Remember, because your application is not living. Cool. Let's do that, TOS notification. Actually, TOS notification from a tile notification perspective is exactly the same things. So now in the XAML, really, don't do it that at home. I'm sure you will fail certification if you put something like this, but we do it. You fail anyway for whatever reason. I think we have really a lot of fun to push back the first time that you submit an application. Just to say, we really check your application. Then after you submit the second one, it's much easier. Can tell you from experience. Now, there are a couple of tricks. Actually, Sasha and Christo, they will do a session explaining all the tips and tricks to pass certification, because there are some things that is hard to understand, and if you don't do it, it will be hard. Tile notification, TOS notification, same. I have a template exactly as the tile. There are all the templates for TOS, because I can even put a nice image, a nice text. In this case, I take only one with a single text line, as ugly as I can. I get the elements, the text. I change the text in the XML with remember to use more the photo apps. How stupid is that? And say, you know, I want to schedule a notification 30 seconds after. Here you can even fix a date or something like this, or a time. You can even send multiple. So you can really spam the user up to 4,096 toast. Then you will be really super rating you will get. I call it spam toast, and now I send it to my user. So I run my application, do something, whatever, kill my application. Now the call will run, and in 30 seconds it will bother me. You don't believe me? I have really a lot of faith on Windows 8, so let's go ahead and do some PowerPoint too. And I'm in desktop mode. So the toast, you will see, it can span from the Metro or the Windows Store modern UI to the PowerPoint. So hopefully it will annoy me in about 30 seconds and say, use the app again. Now, you've seen this is the way that you can do. While you're running, you can send toast and tile notification. While you're killed, you have no way to change those information. It's a kind of useful for some scenario. It's about useless if I want to show some near real-time data. So if I want to show some near real-time data, it will not work, the toast notification. My boy is so stupid today. You need to enable that. Ah, you are so cool, you would have come right now. No. I had to even do the mistake. Ah. Okay, here in the package manifest, you see, look, I want to have TOS capable, yes, and I even take the batch logo that I need after that, so I'm set. Okay. So what I forgot to say, let's remove it, okay. I need to say TOS capable. That was my mistake. If you don't declare it, it will not show it, and the user cannot disable. So the reason is to be able to have the user disable. I kill my app. Now I have a bit more faith that it will show up sometime, somewhere. Okay, Windows Push Notification Service is another way that I can send notification while I'm dead. So what I can do, I can have a public subscriber in your infrastructure, and you can send to a channel, to a Microsoft server, and say, please notify this device, in this specific case, this user, about this information. So it's super scalable, it's super cool. The only big disadvantage, you need a server infrastructure from your own. You can use Azure, we have a toolkit for Azure extra, but you need, oh, you see, save, it's bothering me, so how cool is those? You should really not implement too many of them. But now, in the push notification, I can send toast to the time notification while my application is dead. So for example, I could say, if Microsoft goes over $40, please send me a notification. Now, the only disadvantage here is I need to do this pub subscriber logic in your own. We give toolkit to help. Sending the message, you really pack the same XML. You get the registered channel, and you send information. If you have done with the phone, it's not the same, but it's very, very similar. So it's a free service. We give you the infrastructure you need to buy. It turns out that there are some cases that is still overkill, because think about this quote, for example. It means that for every task that a user has in his desktop, they have a server-side things which say, oh, user Ronnie want to monitor Microsoft, I don't know, Google, US dollar, and the euro. User, blah, blah, needs to monitor this and this and that. So you're never finished constructing. And maybe the user disinstalled the app, you don't even know that it doesn't exist anymore, and so on. There is an alternative approach. It's not the best one. It's an alternative. They are called background tasks. So here is how the process works on Windows 8 Windows Store apps. We launch the application. It comes a splash screen. It's in foreground or snap view. Your application run, and then the user switch to another app. You get frozen, and if we don't have enough resource, you get kicked from the memory. You're dead. Now, there is a possibility to have a background task. It means I can register a piece of code and say, look, on specific scenario, I want to get wake up and do some work. It doesn't wake up the full application. It's a special class. What you can do, there are various triggers. So a classical trigger is if a user is present or not, so it changes presence. I'm leaving the machine. I'm not moving the mouse and keyboard. So think about Skype. It needs to notify, oh, is away the guy, or is inactive. I'm not running Skype. It's running a background task that notify the server side of Skype that you're not doing anything on the PC. And this is with the background task. Another one that you can say is if I get a specific message on the network, classical, a Skype call. I get a Skype call. The OSCO is a specific packet for this app. It sends a toast notification to the user and says, you want to click it here? Somebody's calling you. And from that on, you really start the application. So it's not that Skype lives in the background consuming 300 cores and 400 gigabytes of RAM. No, it's really dead, and there's only a piece of code that makes sense. So that's really cool to save battery and save on. What you have also is called maintenance trigger and lock screen trigger. Lock screen trigger say, oh, for some apps, up to 7, a user can decide that his application has 2 seconds CPU every 15 minutes. So in this case, what I do, I say I register a task, and every 15 minutes, it's waking up, do some work and so on. This is exactly how Swiss code works. What they do, they wake up every 15 minutes, they check what in the local settings what are your tiles. They do the request to the JSON service. They get the value and send the tile notification. They don't have a server infrastructure for that. So it's very cheap to do that. It's fairly simple. You have some limitation. Every 15 minutes, you need to be in the lock screen. Or you can do every 15 minutes if you're not in the lock screen, but you are on attached to the main power, not on battery. So that's the rules that we have. 2 seconds CPU seems slow, but it means 2 seconds at 100% CPU. If I do a network request that takes 10 seconds, it doesn't count against that because it's asynchronous. I don't use any CPU in my app. So until I get back the message. So don't worry about the time. You have enough time to gather data, pack it, and send a notification. So let's do that. Let's create a background task. The idea will be cool to show if you have new picture or not in your folder. So to see if somebody has posted the image in the picture folder, I need to query. Do you have new picture? Or in this case, I can even to simplify my process to show how many pictures do we have, the totals. So it will change if I change the data there. So how I do that? First thing to do is to say I want a specific class view that my application doesn't run. I need to create a component that it can run on the background. So you create a new type of class, new type of DLL if you want. A new project. And it's a Windows runtime component. This is something that you can do in C++ on C#. It's a component that everybody can see. It's not only for your application. Even HTML5 JavaScript app can use this component eventually. So I give it a name. It should be the right name, so I copy so I don't do strange spelling mistake. I call it background task. And in this simple project, I implement my logic to update the tile. So let's copy the code, and I explain you the code. Here's a bit of code, but not too. So the first thing, you need to implement an interface, iBackground task. It means that when 15 minutes pass, the OS will call this method, the run, because it's implemented this interface. You get a deferral, say, wait, I tell you when I'm finished. I tried to stick in the 2-second CPU, I swear, but I please wait until I'm done. You get the tile update manager, exactly the same as before, with a specific tile. I'll show you it later. I get the no folder. I say, look, give me all the files that you have it. And then you get the tiles. The square block, in this case, I want to do, when I'm large, I want to show the carousel. When I'm small, I want to show how many pictures I have. And then I say, look, the inner text of the first line, it should be the totals of the file that I have in my picture folder, and I send the notification. That's it. That's about what you need to do in the background. You can do call a JSON service, get some data, create your own tile, get a picture from the server, store it locally. You can do quite a bit of things here. Now, we compile this one. Now I need to set my application that it wants to do that. So I go in my package manifest. I need to have a badge logo. Then I need to say I want to be on the lock screen. And then if you want to be in the lock screen, it tells you, oh, you need to declare this capability. And in this case, I want to say I want to have a background task. So where it should be, background task, right? And background task, you can say, what is the event? You can see control channel means you want to monitor the network. In my case, I want to get if a timer. You can even say push notification. Somebody sends you a notification. You can pre-parse or do some logic more. Now you need to define an entry point, and that the entry point will be background task, right? And dot the class name that we have created. So the class name, let's copy, because I'm sure I will do the mistake here. Sorry, I was already doing the mistake. Okay, cool. Now I'm in my manifest. So it say call the background task project, the tile updater. Last thing, I need to register that. So I need to do some code. I say, look, when you navigate on the first page, do this logic. So in this case, I go, grab it, copy. Sorry, it's not that one. Voila. And I say, look, try to see if, let's do a sync. So I want to request if it let me go through the lock screen. You can ask, put me on the lock screen by default. If you start Swiss code the first time, you will see comes the same message. And then you say, look, if I don't, if I'm not yet registered, I want to register a new background task that has a trigger every 15 minutes. The entry point is this one, and register it. That's the amount of code that you need to do your test. Now I start one. I'm not sure that if you start from the debugger, it will work. So let's redo one. Quickly should ask me to put me on the... Okay, say, do you want to put the photo album as a lock screen application so it can run every 15 minutes? Yes? allow, and from now on, every 15 minutes, it will go, query how many pictures I have, and show me on the tiles here, especially if I do the small one, here, it will show me the picture. It takes like 15 minutes, the first time cannot run, so it's basically the first time it can be 30 minutes. For showing the result, I already created another one that showed you the number of pictures to a background task. So this is how it works, and this is how you can notify or do some logic, some cleanups, some cache checking, there is a new version of application or whatever you want. So this is a small trick that can bring you a more productive environment that go through the Windows notification service and so on, that it creates a much more complex thing. I know that, for example, Ricard and SwissQuote, they use the same mechanism because they wrote a small example for them, and it works very well. And actually, it's even cool that you get even the toast notification that is bothering you again. Cool. So I think that's important to note, to understand the process, because some people come, Windows, it's always running in the background. No, only foreground, it makes sense. We don't want to screw up the performance of other application because my application run, but for certain scenario, you can have a bit of time to do your own process. Have we lost the direction? No, that's just a small hint to what I want to show next. Another thing that we have is a Bing Map SDK. A lot of applications, they want to use maps, they want to show, and we offer a SDK, and by the way, with a really large, large volume, it's free, up to extreme large, so if you will do the competition to the iOS maps that doesn't work, you want to do the same, you can use a Bing Map, then probably you need to start to pay something. But again, the cool thing is a fairly easy to use SDK, and we offer that. So I thought it would be cool to show it to you, how I can implement Bing on top of my application. The scenario is very simple. I have some pictures that have metadata. They have location aware. My camera can have a GPS. It can locate. So it would be cool to show where this picture was taken. So now the Bing SDK is a bit tricky. It's created in C++. They created in C++. I don't know why. And the advantage of C++, you can reuse a lot of C++ that you know and so on. The disadvantage, it needs to be recompiled for every platform. So I show you the first thing that happened. I want to add a reference, and I want to get Bing Maps. And if you get Bing Maps, you also need to get the C++ runtime. Okay, so far so good, but it tells you something is wrong here. It's maybe too small, but it means something is wrong. The problem is that my package is set. This package works across ARM and Intel device. We don't care. Now Bing say, you cannot do that. You need to recompile. Actually, you can even create, so basically create multiple packages. You don't need to change code, but you need to compile a version for every platform. Basically, two or three platforms if you want to use 64 bits. So now the first thing I go in the configuration manager, I say, instead of any CPU, I want an Intel base. So, now I rebuild my solution, and the error, they went away, and my application is ready to go. Now if I want to publish for ARM, I need to compile or create a script in Visual Studio to compile automatically always for both platforms. Okay, now I'm ready to use Bing Maps. I can go back on my Photo Viewer application and say, look, I want to add here a namespace. I forget the namespace, it should be XML namespace, dot Bing, I think, and then it's using Bing.maps. No idea, then I check. Something like this. Let's see if it's right. It's using Bing.maps. Did I type it right? Okay, I don't know. Let's see if it's compiling after. Bing.maps seems good. Okay. Now, what I want to do is in my page, outside the flip view, to have a small control here and say I want a Bing map. By default, it's collapsed. He has the credentials, so my developer key. And then I say it should be top left, and the size it should be 640 by 480. Very easy. What I do next, I add a second button on my app bar. Let's copy the button. Let's go here and give it a name. Let's call it map, and let's call it show on map, something like this. And let's create a new event handler for that. Pam, new event handler for map button. So now I'm ready to go and write the logic for the map. So the logic for the map is fairly easy. And it sounds like this. I say, look, are you visible? If not, then I'm ready to show it. If you're visible, hide it. So it's a toggle switch, not so interesting. So now I know that in my file information of the current selected image, I want to get the latitude and longitude. So I get the latitude and longitude. I show the map. I get a push pin. On the push pin, I type O or whatever I want to see in the push pin. I set the location of the push pin on the latitude and longitude that the photo was taken. Here I took the picture. I add the push pin, and the last thing I do, I say, look, I want to see the satellite images, and I want to see the view. It should be at this latitude and longitude, so the images should be centered, and at the 18 zoom level. I check what level will match. Now, if I didn't do too many mistakes, cool, start. Yeah, I want to go to my blah, blah here. And now I have this cool picture here. It's taken somewhere, a guy jumping from a stone in the lake. How stupid is that? I can show the map, and in fact, you can see he was taken on the lake at the Gotthard Pass. You can see, if you know, Gotthard Pass is the small lake in there this summer. And as a proof of that we took it in the lake is not Photoshop, I'm the guy here holding the camera with the small boat to take the picture and so on. So I want to show, actually, I'm so stupid, I want to do the same picture, but of course I couldn't go that far away with the bike. And everybody asks, what happens after this one? Of course, you jump in the water, nothing happens, and you go back. Sometime I'm too stupid, I need to do some. I really like to take picture, but then I get carry over on the ideas. Okay, you've seen how simple and cool it's using BeamMap. The only challenge is you need to compile twice for ARM and Intel base. You don't need to change code, so that's the good thing. Okay, next thing, on the BeamMap SDK is really explain how you can do that automatically. The last thing I wanted to show you, is the semantic zoom, how you can implement semantic zoom. So semantic zoom is this possibility to have the pinch and have a different way. You have seen, I've shown the snow report, I could do a semantic zoom. It takes all the letters of the alphabet, I see the snow, the temperature, and these kind of things, right? Now, so annoying, this is really killing me. Should remove that during the demo. Anyway, it really works every 30 seconds, this will bother me. You can have different representation views. So I can zoom out and get a different view. Oh yes, I have 14 fruits and so on. So view that the picture have tags. You've seen that I was searching with tag this morning. Search Mimi, Ian, search for Trial, Lauberon, all the picture I took. It would be cool that when I zoom out, I see the tags, right? So that would be the pattern. There are two approaches. One is the automatic approach. There is a group view. I think in another session will be shown. It's very easy. But sometimes you want to override the way that semantic zoom works, and that's what I wanted to show. So you get the animation and sound free, and you need to write just a little bit of code to do the logic. So I wanted to do it in the main page, where I have all the thumbnails, and do the logic from there on. So as you can see, here I have a grid view. Now what I can say, I say, look, I want to have a semantic zoom. And by default, the semantic zoom dot zoom in view, zoomed in view, right? It should show this grid view. Actually, let's simply drag it, okay? So I see semantic zoom in view, show what you added before. Now the only thing I need to copy is the position of the. You see the semantic zoom is here, it's not good. It should be on the main cell, so it should go down here. So that was the trick I did. So now it's up there. Zoom in view is clear. I want another zoom out view. So I can say semantic zoom dot zoom out view, zoom out view, right? And here I want another grid view. And this grid view for the moment has nothing. I just want to show you the concept. So I go in. If I zoom, I get another view. If I zoom back, I get the default view, okay? So now, by default, if you will use a grouped collection, it will do the job for you. If not, you can implement your own logic. So let's do the logic. The logic is quite simple, actually. So I want to show a different grid view. And in this case, I want to show you, where is grid view? Voila. I want to show a different grid view. And in this case, it's very, very simple what I want to do. I want to have a square, exactly the same size of the tile, 150, 150, that has a text block in it, and it will show me binding all the tags that I have. So I simply want to see Jan, Mimi, Gotthard, Trial, and so on. Okay, last thing I need to do is to wire up an event. I say zoom view, change something, I don't remember. Visual, I need to check the event, how it's called, this view change completed. Okay, sorry for taking time to get it. So, it basically say, when I complete the view change, so if from zoom in to zoom out and vice versa, do the logic. And the logic here, I can show it to you, ba-da-bam. I say, look, if your zoom in view, so basically you're changing to zoom out, what do you want to get? All the keywords that you can get. So first keywords, I put it on all, so I can even unfilter if I want to. I get the observable collection of the picture collection that I have. I loop through. If I want some information and yes, some keywords, I add the keywords to my keyword list, so it will add multiple keywords. I get the distinct keywords, that's cool, you can use links on top, so I say, oh, because of course Mimi has multiple times, he has multiple times, and that's it. And it's binding to my grid that I added, so I will see all the tags available. If, in the other sense, I click and I go from zoom out to zoom in view, it check. If I have all the picture, then it's clearly the keywords. If not, it takes the keywords that I selected and it put it here. So now I simply need to require the pictures. So let's do that. And view that I have all already the logic to query the picture that is this one. I can use the refactoring and say, look, extract a method, refactor, extract a method, call it query pictures. Voila, and now I'm done. So basically, when it starts, it goes in, and here you see we'll use exactly the same logic that I use for the search. So now, if I didn't do any mistake, you can see all the picture that I'm loading. Track, I get the tag, and I say, oh, I want just to see Ian picture. You get Ian. I want to go back to all. I get all the picture. So that's pretty cool, because it's very nice to filter information based on metadata that you have and so on with this semantic zoom. And you can see it's not that complex. So you have two ways, the automatic way, it will navigate itself through group collection, or the manual way that I show in this case, that is pretty cool. So I'm basically done with my session. I think you've seen it took me an hour now with a bit of copy-paste, of course, and it took me another 20 minutes this morning. So netto, if I would code it really from zero, it would take like 4 or 5 hours of work. And I really implemented most of the Windows 8 concept, right? I have search integration, settings with roaming integration. I have sharing integration. I have added semantic zoom, the navigation. I even add Bing maps to it and so on. So you see, the base is fairly simple, and the SDK is very rich, so you can have a lot of fun. And I really recommend, try to win this tablet. Try to build a simple app for starting. You don't need to create a super complex one. Publish through the store, learn the store process and so on, and you will see that you will get more and more, let's say, interest in building cool Windows 8 application. So, Again, I hope I really show it to you, the essential things. There are multiple sessions across the day taking you through more details. And by the way, I will publish both LiveX, but also the complete source code of my samples. Again, it's not production ready, but you can take a lot of examples. There will be a video, and you can understand how I do some tricks, and you will see it's really not that hard. I will be around, as always, across lunch now and all the afternoon on the break, and I will be always around. Just bother me. As you see, I speak badly German, English, Italian, I speak very well. So you can bother me with questions and understand even more about this great platform. Thank you very much, and have a good lunch. See you.